Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
I had to go about it, write it out, and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell you. I had to fail, had to fall, just for what I did well.
All right, it's day six of the 2023 Men's World Cup in India. Adam Collins and Cam Ponson be with you in India. The action this morning was between England and Bangladesh in Dharamshala. Cam, tell us all about it in 30 seconds.
Johnny Bairstow and David Milan whacked it up top. But Johnny Bairstow got out for 50. Milan continued to whack it. Joe Root then came in, whacked it a bit more elegantly than David Milan. He eventually got out around about the same time as David Milan. England looked like they could have got about 700. They were really well placed. They were roughly kind of 250, 300 for two with just over 10 to go. Bangladesh bowled beautifully well to restrict them to 364, but 364 was always going to be too many, especially when Rhys Topley got in the party and bowled beautifully up top and basically ended the game within the power play by removing all three of Bangladesh's left-handers.
Nicely done, Cam. Yeah, so the margin is 137 runs, with England having Milan making 140 from 107, his sixth one-day 100, his fourth this year, really turned it on. His 100 coming in 91 balls, Bairstow 52, Root 82 from 68, but his last 65 came in about 40-odd balls, some contributions down the list. Bangladesh's bowlers did well to keep it to 66 from the final 10. I think we all thought at 298 runs on the board with 10 to go, England seemingly always hit 100 in the back 10 when they're in a situation like that. Butler elevated himself to 4. He came and went for 20 in a hurry, and they just got tied up by some pretty good death bowling from Bangladesh. So 3 wickets for Shurafal Islam, who at one point took 2 wickets in 2 balls, including bowling Liam Livingston and Mehdi Hassan. The other one, we'll come to that, the 2 Mehdi Hassans, they both bowl off breaks, took 4 for 71, and the captain Shakib Al Hassan 1 for 52 bowling in the middle overs. Just on that, I think that for Bangladesh, where they found themselves in early strife from a strategic or tactical perspective was that they needed Shakib to keep the shackles on, because Milan was batting so well, especially through the leg side. I mean, he's now up to, as I said, 4 one-day hundreds this year. That's the most ever joint for England. And he's made his sixth one-day century in his 23rd innings, the most ever. No one's ever done it quicker than 27 innings before. How about that?
It's remarkable. And he just slogs it so well.
Yeah.
He just batters the leg side, and he's so kind of brutal in his simplicity. And I'm kind of like, I've never really quite got David Milan, and now I'm kind of having to sit here and go, well, obviously I'm wrong. Like, he's genuinely having this generational period of form. He's, as you said, he's the fastest ever to 6 ODI hundreds. He's got 4 this year, and it's kind of absolutely vindicating not only England's decision to pick him as first choice, but also that swap to bring Brook into the squad for Jason Roy, because Ben Stokes has been away, so England will be able to keep that balance of their side. But I've always had it with Milan, like, I think I've said on this show before, that I thought he was the stag do selection. Like, there were people unavailable in the ones, and so he got to go up top. And then he scored so many runs that they just couldn't drop him, despite wanting and thinking there are other people who are better than him. But he's held on to that opportunity, performed better than arguably anyone else in the world, and is rightly where he is, and potentially leading England through a World Cup campaign.
Yeah, so you called him the stag do selection just before he went on this run of 674 runs at 84, a strike rate of 104 centuries in that sequence. Someone today, my captain in the authors team, Charlie Campbell, said to me that, is he... Is he Keir Starmer? And I think the point he's making is unpopular, doesn't have a lot of latitude or leeway when it comes to a lot of people following the sport or politics, as it were, yet seemingly quite effective when it comes to Milan posting numbers and I suppose, if you want to continue this all the way through, Starmer posting poll numbers. And the only poll that matters is next year. But you know what I'm trying to say? You know, like guys or cricketers who don't always have a lot of latitude. So I think after Milan missed out against New Zealand, people were again saying, I don't know, World
14 Cup, of 24, too slow.
World Cup, too slow. But Milan finds a way every second or third innings doing something match-winning as it was today.
Well, I think that's quite right. It's every second or third innings, that's literally what the best players in the world do. Like,
yeah.
It's actually, I remember Rahul Dravid talking about, like, two out of every three innings, I didn't reach 50. It's a game of failure. I was like, that's not a game of failure. That is a game of great success. And that's what David Milan's doing. I was kind of going off that. My political analogy in my head, I went to back to how Theresa May became Prime Minister or leader of the Tory party, and that kind of just one by one, everyone else kind of folded their cards.
Right.
And she was left there standing. And that's kind of the where I went with that. I wouldn't necessarily sign on to the Starmer thing completely, because if we get to next year and Starmer's Prime Minister, then I will agree with you. But at the moment, still a leader of the opposition.
Well, it could work either way, right? If England don't win the World Cup, or if Milan has a rough trot and Starmer doesn't win the election, then it'll continue through. On the other hand, if England go back-to-back and Labour are victorious next year and there's a change of government, it goes all the way.
David Milan, England captain for the Ashes, 2025-26.
time will tell. So, Milan absolutely flying. Joe Root started the tournament with a couple of 80s now. I mentioned the acceleration from him today, which I thought was quite important. They made a big point after the loss against New Zealand to reinforce they needed to go harder in tough situations. That Morgan-esque philosophy from before 2019. Some days we'll get bowled out for 100. That's okay, because most of the time we'll go above 300. Well, they did that today. Yeah, and they could have got 400, but 364. It felt like on a day that was looking like maybe a banana peel. Yeah, Bangladesh winning against Afghanistan, had a great couple of years in this form of the game. We were talking about them yesterday when they knocked off Afghanistan in their first game, that they had enough weapons to be a threat for England, but the big boy stood up.
I think you're completely right, and right there. And what's really pleasing for England is it's such a kind of call and response victory.
Mm.
After that loss against New Zealand, Joe Root said to the BBC, he was like, you're not going to see us getting caught on the ring anymore. Like, you're going to see lads getting out trying to boom it 20 rows back.
Right.
And they responded in such a manner. You had David Milan from the top not getting 14 off 24, having that fantastic century. Joe Root, he's kind of like almost like a bullet train battery. He's like, he bats so quickly but so quietly without any real kind of frill or kind of obvious bludgeoning power. I've lost my train of thought completely there.
It's okay. I'll pick you up and say that what I think was noteworthy with Milan is that each time a new bowler came on this morning, which it was for us, he hit a boundary off them in the first over, or a couple in the case of the other Mehdi Hasan. Like, he immediately was transferring pressure back. Had that reverse sweep out quite early as well. I think he advanced to 50 with a reverse from 39 balls or something like that. So he was willing to bat in a more enterprising fashion, and I think that set the way for the others that followed.
But what your point about Bangladesh being the banana skin, and what was I think was really fortunate for England is they had them in Dharamshala, in that England were able to then transition to that four-seamer attack in conditions that suited them a little bit better than where Bangladesh, who have been strong in the format recently, but would be a much tougher challenge in, say, Chennai, where they take on New Zealand next. Had England had this same fixture in Chennai, where you're coming up against, like, the spin trio of Bangladesh, and all of a sudden you're going, bloody hell, we're one game, one loss, and now all of a sudden we've got to play a very tricky nation in even trickier conditions. And yeah, I think everything's just settled down a little bit for England now, because it really was a case of if they'd beaten New Zealand, this would have been seen as another routine victory en route to making the semi-finals. Whereas actually, you lose this and all of a sudden your campaign's on life support. Like, it's not dead, but you had to pretty much be perfect through to the end to make the semi-finals.
Yeah, you get one more slip up and they've still got games against, you know, Australia and, but you don't and South Africa ahead of them.
They wouldn't necessarily have got that extra game to slip up in, because if they lose it, if they're 6-3, but given how heavily they lost to New Zealand, then their net run rate's fucking them, basically, and they could have missed out that way.
And it's now back in the black. I note that net run rate, we might actually, you know what, let's go to net run rate, because this game felt dead after six overs of the reply. So Topley takes two wickets in his first over, an absolute beauty off the top, which I can't remember who he knocked over now, the first one. Tanzid caught it second slip, and then Shanto, who's been so dangerous batting in the middle overs for Bangladesh, doesn't make the middle overs here. He's caught in the gully or at backward point. Then an absolute gem from Topley to remove Shakib Al Hassan, might be a contender for the ball of the tournament so far. So that's in the sixth over. So we broadly speaking know the way this game's going to go.
Yeah.
unless it's a huge twist. By the end of the 20th over, Bangladesh needed to go at nines. At the end of the 30th over, they needed to go at 11 and over. They're never doing it. But they make their mind up, not unreasonably, they're going to try and bat through the overs and preserve some precious net run rate. They're not going to get bowled out for 170 swinging. In the end, they're all out for 227, which is still a thumping, but in context, they might have saved themselves a decimal point or two with net run rate. And to me, it's always the thing about why is that the tiebreaker instead of head-to-head? Head-to-head is so much more elegant. I get that net run rate incentivizes teams to play more aggressively the whole way through, but isn't that the way modern cricket's played anyway? We're not back in 1992 or 1996 where four and over was a pretty good day. I mean, they're all trying to hit the cover off it regardless. I don't think, I think net run rate, we've graduated beyond it because now we're seeing it used the other way, where it actually slows the game down rather than speeding it up.
Well, exactly. We can't have it both ways in that we say, if teams are ahead, we go, God, if they're chasing 200, it's like, rather than chasing it in 30 overs, we're like, let's see them chase it in 17.
Yeah.
And really kind of put the hammer down and then criticise teams who then put the brakes on their own defeat to protect that metric. Of course, Bangladesh were within their rights and they'd have been stupid not to do that.
Yep.
It's kind of, it's one of those ones where I'm sure in some room somewhere, there's a reason why they haven't opted against head to head. What that reason is, I don't particularly know. Is it a case of maybe it actually, we talk about it being boring now if we go on net run rate, but actually if it's head to head, does that kind of swap over how exciting things could be in the final round?
That's definitely why. It's because they want jeopardy all the way through, and they want a situation where a team can go from fifth to fourth provided they flog a side. And we've seen it manipulated before at the 99 World Cup, where Australia had their go slow against the West Indies in order to try and bring a team through with them. Didn't quite work out the way they planned it, but I think they scored their last nine runs in that victory in 13 overs with Steve Waugh batting with Michael Bevan to game that run rate. So it's not a new thing. Yeah. It's just that we're seeing it in a slightly different way earlier in the tournament as well.
What do you want in your sport? Do you want justice or entertainment? So
yeah, I think a helping of each works with head-to-head. Just on England's bowling, I felt like low-key, really important day for Chris Wokes. Didn't bowl that well off the top. Got hit for three boundaries on the trot by Lytton Duss, Lytton Duss was outstanding. We're not touched on him yet, but he made, I think it was 74 from about 60-odd deliveries, but had a real crack in the power play with wickets falling around him and had 45 of the first 50 runs that Bangladesh made or something like that. So Wokes has a chunk taken out of him in the first over, then returns to get a wicket in the power play, which really sealed Bangladesh's fate. They were four down inside the first 10. Gets another one later. I think from memory it was Mushfika when he was bowling around the wicket to him. I'll check it rather than saying it. It was Mehdi Hasan who Butler had caught behind. A lovely piece of Chris Wokes 101, really. But you can see a world where Wokes, much as it is with Milan, because he's not playing in England and he's not using a Duke's ball, a couple of bad performances in a row and we're going to start talking about the guy who's been a double world champion and the man for all seasons for England in white ball cricket, having his spot under threat because there are people on the sidelines needing to get in, like Ben Stokes.
Well, I remember you talking about this just the other week about people forget that Chris Wokes' kind of emergence story or where he became the England player was in the subcontinent.
In Asia.
But I think it was interesting today that Butler kind of kept going with him. It was almost the case of like, we're going to bowl you back into form. Like, I know you're going around the park, but we have runs to play with. You are our kind of premier seam bowling all-rounder, as it were. And we just got to keep the faith. And I think, two games does not make a bowler not, if that's a saying at all. And
is now.
It is now. I think it was very elegant, actually. I really enjoyed it. But Chris Wokes, they're places I'm going to save my worry for, and Chris Wokes isn't one of them. I think it's going to be absolutely fine. If we fast forward to South Africa, who do we want with the new ball? It would be Chris Wokes.
And they're all in on Adil Rashid as well as the number one spinner, and rightly so. 1 for 42. I think the overs he bowled before the wicket were as important as when he came back and bowled a googly through the gate. Just being able to bowl dry, and we've seen it. It's not been easy for spinners bowling after dark to bowl dry overs so far in the tournament. Not sure how dewy it was in... Well, actually, it wouldn't have been. It was a day game, not a day-night game. So it'll be more of a test when he's got to bowl in the evening, as it was against Conway and Ravindra in the opening game. But 1 for 42, he'll be thrilled with that, as will Mark Wood. 1 for 29 from 10. But with Wood, forget about the figures, he bowled a number of balls above 150 clicks. And with Wood, that always remains the most reliable indicator of Wood taking wickets is Wood bowling extremely quickly. So, you know, you add that to Topley coming into the side for Moeen Ali. Moeen out of the team early on, Ben Stokes needs to come back. Reece Topley straight away in form with 4 for 43, including a couple of outstanding wickets, and one caught down at deep third with extra pace, to be fair, from him. It's going to be tough, with the exception of games at Chennai maybe, for Moeen to play in this England team, I think.
It was. I was thinking exactly that when Topley was taking those wickets. Immediately, people going, cool, they look a better side with four seamers, two spinners. And like, of course they were. They lost by 9 wickets. It might have been 9 million wickets the last game. And here they've won by 100 runs. The side's always going to look better. And the person that's come in has been the pick of the bowlers. But it does feel like that's almost going to be the side that England settle on. Like, if there are going to be changes for the Afghanistan fixture, maybe they rest Mark Wood and go Gus Atkinson instead, get someone else in kind of the mix. But it is one of those like real issues for Moeen Ali here, in that also Liam Livingston didn't really have a chance to do anything particularly right or wrong. He got a fantastic ball first up and was clean bowled for a golden duck. Obviously that is literally the worst you can do as a batter, but at the same time it means he hasn't really proven or lost any kind of credit in the bank, and you also got a wicket first ball. There's a story my friend tells me, which I've always really enjoyed, where his dad played like a handful of first class matches in New Zealand, like way back when or whatever, and he got a pair on debut, and to his surprise he got picked for the following match, and he went to the coach and went, oh, thank you very much for like your faith in my selection and all that. Like, I was surprised I was picked, and the coach goes, yeah, well, I couldn't drop you, I haven't seen you bat. And kind of that whole idea of like, if Moeen Ali's going to find a way back into this team, if it's going to be a four-seamer, two-spinner kind of balance, is that Liam Livingston loses form, that he has to try and prove he's better than that. And that didn't happen today.
Well, that's it, isn't it? Livingston comes on to bowl the 40th over and takes a wicket with his first ball. Lovely ball too, but that all feeds into it, I think. And look, they bodied Bangladesh today up top in the power play, because Topley's able to do that. Extra height, extra bounce, change of angle, left arm mostly over the wicket, but we saw round the wicket from time to time as well. He's developed himself as a specialist bowler at the death as well. So Moeen can hit quick runs, but he's not going to body you with the ball. And I think that's the challenge that Moeen has getting back in. Pitches might deteriorate when there's more traffic on them. Deeper into a 6.5 week tournament, they'll play one game at Chennai. I think that might be their next game, actually. No, they play at Delhi next. But Delhi will turn as well, based on what we saw there earlier this year. Certainly, when they get to Chennai, it will. But yeah, this configuration does feel like one that they'll be more comfortable with as they work through the tournament. And the last thing I wanted to mention, which I forgot to mention before, is that nobody now has more one-day runs in a World Cup for England than Joe Root. So the glue in the middle, he's not going anywhere. You know, Livingston gets a golden duck today but takes a wicket. I don't imagine Livingston's going anywhere. They want him as the finisher. So I guess my last question for you before we advance to the Hall of Fame is, where does Ben Stokes fit if he is available for the next fixture? And it sounds like he might be.
I think they will leave Stokes out of Afghanistan on the basis that England expects themselves to win and make sure that he's 100% right for it. There's no point in risking him, and I think he just comes straight in for Harry Brook.
So Brook becomes a spare bat again.
I don't know if there'll be any debate around it. I think it'll be a kind of completely straight swap.
All right, time for the final word, Hall of Fame. The final word, Hall of Fame, is brought to you by Westfield London and Westfield Stratford City. We're already turning our mind to Christmas, and we're doing so because Europe's tallest Christmas tree is at the ice rink at Westfield London. Europe's tallest Christmas tree. Stand down, Berlin. Got nice markets. Haven't got a fucking huge Christmas tree. That's Westfield London. That's over in Shepherd's Bush. Jeff and I have had a couple of day trips out there. We've hit some bombs at Sixers. We've had a bite to eat at one of the Indian restaurants there. It's a stunning little street there. But the biggest Christmas tree. So whether you're as comfortable on the ice as the West Coast Eagles circa 2006, that's a gag about football and drugs and a premiership team from back then, or you've never skated before, it's a perfectly festive day out. Day or night out.
Do we know when the tree goes up?
We don't. We can probably find out by icerinkwestfieldlondon.co.uk. You can buy yourself a ticket. I'm going to the first night of it with the girls. It starts, I believe, in November. I think mid-November. So it'll still be when the World Cup's going on. But buy your tickets. icerinkwestfieldlondon.co.uk and have a little glide around the circuit. Like, you know, a little Torval and Dean. You can do the flip they got deducted points for back in 1994, moved from the gold position to the bronze position. You can do what they did in Sarajevo in 84 when they won the gold. Who's Torval, who's Dean? That's my question. For all of you out there, be there. Westfield London, Westfield Stratford City, more extra, less ordinary. Cam, your moment of the day.
I was going to say, one of the best days you can have in London get yourself to Westfield until about 2, then wander down to Shepherd's Bush, which is QPR's home game. Can't remember your life. Perfect. Christmas treat for everyone involved. My Hall of Fame moment, I was actually really enjoying the commentary today for no reason other than I was being a bit of an arse. And Owen Morgan made me laugh when he started this really kind of like quite interesting and profound anecdote about like someone he found really difficult to pick up and like really kind of score runs against. I was like, fuck, who's this going to be? He was like, so Lasith Malinga? And I was like, yeah.
Might have heard of him.
I was like, brilliant. One of the best wide bowlers of all time. If you'd said it would have been more interesting if you said he was really easy to face. That would have been brilliant.
Yeah, this bowler I really struggled with. Brett Dorey played, you know, 3 One-Day Internationals for Australia.
To double down that, actually, I actually have remembered something. I remember interviewing Andrew Hall, the old South African all-rounder, and he spoke about when you first faced Lasith Malinga, your teammates would tell you to watch the umpire's chest because everyone, your body's so trained to picking up the ball from kind of the conventional place, and actually you want to be watching the umpire's chest because that's where the ball came out of.
Love it. I thought Bairstow, a few things about making the bowlers wait. Bairstow making the bowler wait because the PA was still on.
Yeah.
That's a new one. I mean, Bairstow loves to... There is no sight screen that's big enough for Johnny Bairstow. There was a moment where Mustafizur was bowling and Joe Root pulled out at the last moment. And the poor bastard didn't let the ball go. He tried to do the right thing and not let it go. Nearly did his knee.
Yeah.
Doubled over. I get these things happen. It wasn't Root's fault, but those did jump out at me. Rhys Topley's facial expression when knocking over Shakir. They got the super slow-mo. He's like, ooh, yeah, that's a fucking beauty. And it was. You don't get many of those as a left arm over the wicket hitting the top of off.
Absolutely not.
But Topley in great nick. Nice to see friend of the final word, Stephen Finn, get on the broadcast when they were referring to England hat-tricks in World Cups.
Yeah.
I was there for that. Valentine's Day 2014. 5 years to the day from when, before we moved into this house, and 6 years to the day from when our first daughter was born. February 14.
I was about to get, I've literally learned that stat about 30 minutes ago and I was going to reel it off then.
Yeah, so that's a nice one for you. Moeen, Rash and Stokes have been playing cricket together for what, a dozen years? In the age groups? I think they're in the... Moeen was in the age groups with Stokes, wasn't he? Either way, these three know each other so well, right?
Yeah.
And at one point, Rashid's fielding on the boundary at deep third. And between balls, they just kept having a laugh between the three of them. They're all doubling over in laughter. Next ball, the Topley edge, the deep third, and Rashid makes no mistake. So
perfect.
You can't break that man's concentration. It did break my concentration, though, Cam. At the very end of the game, the final wicket to fall was Tashkin Ahmed. He was bowled by Sam Curran for 15. It's more or less irrelevant. What's relevant is the previous ball from Sam Curran smashed leg stump and the bail didn't come off. Now, we've been banging on about this for literally 4 years, since the last World Cup in England in 19. These zinc bails are so bloody heavy, they don't fall off when they should fall off. As we said on the show, on the weekly show a couple of weeks ago, bails are there as an indicator as to when the ball has hit the stump. We have technology now via Ultra Edge and Snicko that can tell us when the ball has hit the stump. The bails falling off for just a dismissal of bowled should be irrelevant. I don't care about bails lighting up or falling off. If the ball's hit the stump, given we have the technology, change the playing conditions. That should be out.
Can we just have like a thin... I'm going to be honest, I don't give a shit. I quite like it. I like the randomness of it.
Isn't it going to happen in a World Cup final where someone...
It might have a World Cup.
You know what I mean?
But he should have bowled a bit more to the right then, shouldn't he?
Yeah, but hitting the stumps enough is enough.
I get that.
Rather from DM.
I think you lose one of the great aesthetic pleasures of the sport if we go down that road. I just think get the bail a bit lighter, get the groove a bit thinner, and let him hit the floor. Gravity is one of the best tools we have in cricket.
I want to keep the bails. I'm not one of these get rid of the bails guys, because the bails has increased the size of the stump, right?
Yeah.
It's marginally bigger because they exist. No problems with them being there in the aesthetic you refer to, but simply that if you're in a televised game, and people will say, what about in recreational cricket? We can never tell. Yeah. The MCC laws oversee that. The ICC playing conditions and each professional comp have their own set of playing rules, if you like, separate rules. And that can be used for this. Anyway, a rant to finish.
On that, I remember playing a club game a few years ago and a dad on my... It was Spencer 2s against Farnham 2s.
Okay.
And there was a rain delay. And a dad got in a vicious row with the umpire about what we should have been back on the pitch, basically. And he got up the ICC World Cup regs as proof of why we should be playing in the Surrey Championship.
Which is wrong, of course, because it's the World Cup regs.
And the umpire was like, you fucking idiot. What are you doing?
Get out the laws. Or get out the comps bylaws. Very least. To come, England have Afghanistan at Delhi on Sunday. Bangladesh playing again on Friday. So just 3 days' time. They're playing New Zealand at Chennai, which I think is a pretty good matchup, actually. Bangladesh spinners, New Zealand on a bit of a roll, but you know, you could see a world where them having not faced a lot of spin so far.
Bangladesh win there would be really fun for the competition.
And the other game in our doubleheader, we neglected to mention, it's the first of two podcasts today. Jeff's got Baz with him, Bharat Sundaresan. I don't know where they are. I think they're in Lucknow. But they've been watching the game at Hyderabad between Pakistan and Sri Lanka, where Sri Lanka got off to a great start, making 344. So that'll all come in the second show today. Thank you, Cam. I'm not sure when you're with us next, but it can't be long because you're doing plenty of these
Absolutely. Throughout
the course of the tournament. England on the board. Our coverage is thanks to Westfield London and Westfield Stratford City. More extra, less ordinary. Talk to you tomorrow. The same we've been doing for centuries. Sorry if I ran out to empty, wrote this so you know what I meant here. I had to go.